Okay.
Good news, I found the record button.
Okay,
Welcome, Locathor, to talking to me, Troy.
Talking to Troy.
I have a question for you before we get started.
Okay.
I need you to visualize in your mind, okay?
Okay.
You're setting a table. Okay. It's not like a formal event, but it's, you know, maybe like a casual, like, friendly dinner.
We're putting the fork on the left.
You're putting the fork on the left, exactly, and that leads me to the important question. I need you to visualize the spoon you're putting down as well, because there is a spoon with this meal, the type of spoon you would put setting the table. Is that a tablespoon, roughly, measurement-wise?
Is a standard spoon for a standard dish one tablespoon in size?
Is that a tablespoon? Because here's what happened.
I was waiting
for you to join, I made some lemonade. But I don't want to make a whole pitcher of lemonade from, you know, the powdered stuff. Mm-hmm. And it said to do 2 tablespoons.
Right.
And I just grabbed a spoon. And now I don't know if that's the correct amount of lemonade in my lemonade.
I don't think that it's that precise. I did the math once, and I have like a little scooper for like some old Powerade powder, because I have a bunch of Powerade things.
Yeah.
And I can put one of those into this like mason jar sized mug that I have. And it all kind of works out.
Yeah, that's
it's close enough.
I think my spoons are slightly smaller than a tablespoon is what I'm going to guess. Because this, it's
well, and
I
how
mean,
much how much
if you look
powder,
at it,
yeah, I mean that looks about the color I would expect.
It's very lemonadey color, but it doesn't. But it's not that strong of a lemonadey taste.
When you scooped it, was the powder above the rim of the spoon, or did you level it off?
I didn't level it off. I gave it, you know, a decent spoonful. I didn't like
see that might
carefully
be a tablespoon.
Pile up a mountain of lemonade powder, but you know, okay. it was a scoop. I didn't level it off. It was just a scoop.
Then you're in the ballpark.
Welcome to Too Young for This Lemonade, a podcast where Locathor helps me talk about lemonade.
I was gonna call this Welcome to Strange New Troys.
Strange New Troys.
Yeah.
But you're the guest, so should it be Strange New Locathors?
I mean, it could be. Is this going to go in the Strange New Worlds feed? Is that or I mean, we can. I think I'm
just not even going to tell the guys we recorded this. I'm just going to put it up on the Too Young for This Trek feed and surprise them. Tyler's out of town right now. He's going to get off a plane and be like, why is there a new episode on my phone? What's happening? We watched Star Trek.
Yeah.
Strange New Worlds,
season 2, episode 1.
Mm-hmm. Which is called The Broken Circle. Which is interesting because Star Trek The Next Conversation is just right around now covering the Circle trilogy from Deep Space Nine, which this has absolutely nothing to do with, except that I thought it was interesting that it says The Broken Circle.
The Next Conversation?
Yeah.
No, I don't think I'm familiar with that one.
It's Matt Myra from Nerdist. Okay. He was one of the guys on Nerdist and a buddy of his. We're working on Goldbergs together, which is a pretty fun show. They were both writers on it, and they were like, hey, we both like Star Trek, let's start a Star Trek podcast. And it is incredibly you've heard me host podcasts. It is incredibly rambly, like,
wow.
And I'm saying that yeah they'll do like a 3-hour episode of their podcast about a single episode of Next Generation.
Okay.
It is absurd. Anyway, The Broken Circle. So
the only other Trek cast that I would care to plug at this interval is the Second Officer Slog, which actually is like out of production. Basically, they were going to go through the Star Trek novels, but in watching Discovery season 2, they and also in doing the other things that they do, they decided that they don't like Star Trek as much as they once thought.
So that happened, I feel like, to several longstanding Star Trek podcasts around that time.
So their other main project is called the Great Gundam Project, where they've been going through Gundam, and it has pushed them much farther politically left than they started at. And so now they're actually so far left that Star Trek is too centrist for them.
I've watched a lot of Star Trek at a lot of different periods of my life, and every time I come back to it, I'm like, wow, not as progressive as I gave it credit for the last time I watched Star Trek.
Exactly. Like,
still, they're doing some work, but they could be doing more work.
Could be doing more.
So this is the first episode of season 2 of Strange New Worlds. I loved the first season of Strange New Worlds.
I really loved it.
and this episode I have extremely mixed feelings about. Spoilers.
Interesting.
I didn't love this episode, and the weirdness for me starts right away because last time on Star Trek, number one got arrested, and yes. She's still in space jail, and Pike is like, there's apparently one lawyer in the whole universe who will take the case, and they keep referring to her as she and her and not saying who it is, so it's gotta be somebody we know. But Pike leaves. He's just gone for this episode.
Well, the lawyer is so important, he has to go and get the lawyer.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and I think that having her be in jail and he has to, like, go off and leave the ship and stuff sets up Spock being in charge. Mm-hmm. So to an extent, I think it's just sort of a hand waving, like, we want Pike to not be in charge of the ship. Why is Pike away from the ship for this episode? Mm-hmm. And give Spock a reason to be in charge.
I mean, it's a good enough reason for that, like, because he's actually, like, doing something as opposed to just, you know, he was on shore leave or whatever. But it bums me out because, I mean, I'm not saying I watched this show for Pike's very good hair, but, like, Pike's very good hair is a definite benefit of watching this show, and there was just very little of it this episode. I assume next episode we'll get the adventures of Pike while they were off doing this heist thing.
Yeah, well, and I don't even know that maybe it's not important. Maybe he goes there and comes back and he's just back.
It's like, everything went great. I brought a lawyer. Oh,
it would be the first time that a shuttle trip ever didn't have some sort of disaster happen to it in Star Trek. But that's maybe true. Maybe that's why Pike is so famous, is because he can go on a shuttle trip and not get kidnapped by Romulans.
Not get kidnapped by Romulans or sent back in time or
crash on a desert planet.
Split into multiple timelines, crash on a different planet with a Romulan.
Have to have Aaron Eisenberg go on his, like, becoming a man journey so he can become full Quazon.
After crashing onto a desert planet, of course.
Right.
Oh, I like that Aaron Eisenberg episode a lot, actually. No, it's one of the few Chakotay-centric episodes that I like.
Yeah.
But this isn't a podcast about Voyager. So the gist of this episode, the kind of driving plot, is that while Pike is away, a distress signal comes in from La'an, who is out trying to help out... Was she taking the kid back? Is that what happened? There was a little girl attacked by Gorn, and she was returning the kid to her parents?
Exactly, but the parents are somewhere outside of the official Federation space, and they are really picky about going in and out of Federation space right now because there was the recent Klingon War. Normally, like at other points in the Trek timeline, you would say, oh, what's the big deal? But I think we can justify it by saying that we nearly collapsed the entire Federation and burned down Earth. So they're going to get a little dicey about it.
So instead of getting approval to go help La'an on this currently Klingon planet, because sometimes it's Klingon controlled and sometimes it's Federation controlled. We'll get to that. They steal the Enterprise with the help of Carol Kane, who's here as like an immortal alien who's been hanging out on Earth, I guess, and is real bored of being at space dock. So she helps them steal the Enterprise.
I think we might have skipped over an element that I was really delighted by. Mm-hmm. Earlier, before Spock is hearing this distress call, he's in sickbay talking to Mbenga, and Mbenga suggests a way that Spock could, you know, relieve his stress is through music, and he actually hands Spock the little lyre that we've seen Spock with in the original series, that he was originally playing the lyre sometimes. And normally it's kind of stupid to like try and explain away every little thing as to how anything got anywhere, but I think in this one case it really did. It worked for me.
I struggle with that the origin story problem of doing any kind of prequel. I recently watched Star Wars Solo, a Star Wars story from Star Wars in Disney Pictures. I don't know what that movie's called. It's something along those lines. And I liked it better than I did before. And I liked it pretty good before. I think that's a pretty good movie. And if you took out all of the like unnecessary explanations of backstory, it would only be about 45 minutes long. And I think it would be a great movie. Because it just does too much of that stuff. Whereas this, I think the reason it works for me is when Mbenga gives him the lyre, he doesn't say, here, learn to play this. He says, hey, you're a Vulcan, so you already know all about music, right? And Spock's like, yeah, we study music because math is cool and music is a weird form of math.
Yeah, Spock like, already seems to have beginner skill with this.
Exactly. So it's not an origin story for like how he learned to play music. It's the origin story for like how he turned music from a thing that he was like aware of the mechanics of into a like emotional and artistic release. And that's really cool for me. If he had never played music and he was like, what's music? And learned it here, I would be annoyed by it. But I like it as a character shift for him.
It's very good.
I like it a lot. He also gets emotionally aroused when Nurse Chapel comes into the room.
Oh my gosh.
I was trying not to say boner Locothor, and I couldn't come up with any. I was like, a mental boner? That's that. Don't say he gets a mental boner, but now I've said it, and we're just going to have it out there. His heart rate goes down when he plays the lyre.
His something grew 3 sizes that day.
Nurse Chapel comes in. his
oh no, you know there's big Spock. Well, what is little Spock? Oh no,
I couldn't come up with a way to format that into a joke, so I've just set it into a microphone. It's weird that they like, I guess this is just like reestablishing grounds for everyone. They're like, hey, don't forget that Spock really likes Nurse Chapel. I feel like they did that in the previously on, and I don't feel like that actually matters for this episode. So it was a little weird.
Well, no, I think what matters is that now specifically Mbenga has a clue, and he says he's not going to interfere, but maybe he'll interfere. But like he's been tuned into it as well.
Okay. Okay.
Because he literally saw it on a little heart monitor. I don't think that's how heart monitors normally work, but whatever.
It's a very fast response time when a Vulcan gets aroused. Like, boom, it's out there. Red alert, set phasers to stun. I don't know. There's a lot of very dumb innuendo that could happen here, but instead I'm just going to say that they steal the Enterprise, which, listen, Spock really likes to steal the Enterprise. That is what I'm learning here, is that this is a thing that Spock is just into.
He's always been stealing the Enterprise. Mm-hmm. His entire career, he's been stealing the Enterprise.
When they went to save Spock in Star Trek III, The Search for Spock, they didn't really need the Enterprise, but Kirk was like, we're going to steal the Enterprise to honor Spock. That's like, it's symbolic of what we're going
to
do.
That's right. We need to honor Spock's memory and steal the Enterprise.
And steal the Enterprise. So Carol Kane is here, like I said, as the new interim chief engineer. And she's great, as always.
She's amazing.
She's so funny. Just as soon as she starts talking, I got a big smile on my face. My wife and I were both like, as soon as she was on screen, we're like, oh my God, who is that? I could not think of who it was. And then I looked, and of course, Princess Bride is where I know her from. That's my go-to. But yeah, they steal the ship. And then go to the planet, right? Anything else happen there?
Anything else happen? Did I forget anything else happen, Troy?
What did I forget?
We get to learn that it does Spock want to do the thing, and then it turns out his thing is, I would like the ship to go now, and it's an amazing joke.
I would like the ship to go now. Okay, so how do you feel about this whole the thing? I mean,
I think that the way that they're constructing a joke around everyone expecting him to have the thing is really good writing. I don't think that the captain having a thing is actually important. I think that they decided to make it up on Discovery, and then here they're kind of making fun of the fact that the Discovery cast or the Discovery writers at least have turned it into a thing.
So I like it. This not Strange New Worlds. This is Strange New Worlds. Lower Decks has made jokes about this, and Lower Decks gets to make jokes about this. They get a pass on making fun of Star Trek, obviously, because that's the whole thing. But Discovery hit this note like one too many times for me.
And so for every captain, I think.
They did it twice for Michelle Yeoh, because didn't they talk about it with her when she was Space Hitler Michelle Yeoh? I'm pretty sure they did.
That's true.
In any case, I feel like they hit that joke too many times. They started the joke here, and I was a little bit groaning. it was saved for me at first because I really like the actress who plays our pilot here, Ortegas. I really like her a lot. And so the fact that she was the one saying it, like, amazing, made me be like, okay. But then, god damn it, if I didn't crack up laughing, the camera zooms in all dramatic and he says, I would like the ship to go now. Like, Spock, you're god, perfect. Just perfect. Perfect execution of a joke that I'm tired of.
It was very well executed.
It's wonderful. They get to the planet. Everybody's rocking some sweet, we're totally not Federation officers, civilian clothes. The planet clothes.
Almost looks like Avatar World. It's got like stupendously tall stone pillars covered in grass and stuff.
Everybody's real dirty and hangs out in a big marketplace. Looks a lot like something out of Star Wars. Actually, looks a lot like Batuu, the setting for the theme parks for Star Wars. Like, the whole thing kind of looked like that. But
I think it's almost Star Wars, but if it was Star Wars, it would be much brighter. Like Tatooine is always super bright, and every place is always, like, super bright. It's the middle of the day, whereas this has more of a sunset look to it.
That's true. Kind of dusky. Lon's doing a drinking game against Klingons in a scene that, if it was not intentionally echoing Raiders of the Lost Ark, it sure felt like it was to me.
Exactly.
And then meets up with the crew and gives them the briefing on what's going on, which is basically this planet every month trades hands or on some sort of schedule trades hands between the Klingons and the Federation being in charge.
Every other month it belongs to one of the two groups. Mm-hmm. I don't know like how any of that works. That doesn't seem to make any sense to me.
It's got to be terrible for the people living here, because there's a line later where one of the Klingons is like, hey, this is a Klingon-controlled planet right now. The bodies pile up. And I'm like, boy, it must suck for the people who live here when they're like, it's the 29th. In a couple days, the Klingons are going to roll in. Everybody, you know, lock your doors for a month. Not good. Not good, Star Trek.
I feel like there is a sense of sometimes bad political realities bump up against the supposed ideals of the Federation, and this is just another time like that.
Yeah. I would like to see, I'd love it if they come back here in 3 weeks.
Oh, I don't think we're ever going to see this planet ever again.
I know we won't, but wouldn't it be great
if we came back here
and it was like all like shining buildings and everything's polished and it's been taken over by the Thong planet people. Like, everybody has just become like a super fit Aryan running around in their underpants. And they're like, oh, this is what it's like when it's under Federation control, not like when those Klingons are here.
Wow.
That feels to me like the kind of weird politics that
is what Star Trek could do, because Star Trek would be unaware of the fact that the Klingons are basically black people. Like, that's what,
right.
That's
they
what
would,
Star Trek
they
thinks
would,
about the Klingons.
They would miss how problematic this portrayal. I mean, that's the portrayal of this planet, is that like everybody's sick and dying here because the Klingons are in charge.
No, it's
that
because
was the vibe I got.
No, it's because it's a mining town and everything's sick and dying outside of a mining town. I don't think it's because of the Klingons. I think you come here in 2 weeks and the Federation is in charge and everything is just as shitty.
Okay. I hope that's the case. It doesn't feel like that's what Star Trek would do. Star Trek would turn it into a glorious Federation colony. There's an organization
for a month?
Yeah, that's my point. Like, that's why else do you have this system? Why do they have the system where sometimes it's Federation and Klingon? What's the point of including that in the show?
They need the dilithium.
But that doesn't for the plot of the show?
Well, I mean, I guess not everything has to be necessarily relevant to the plot all of the time. I guess if you wanted to make up a reason, the reason is that the Admiral April is his name. Was that his Admiral? Famously, possibly not a bad Admiral. Possibly,
yeah, one of the good
remains
ones.
To be seen. He has to tell Spock like, we can't go, but we could go in like 2 weeks, and so Spock
like,
it'll be too late.
Because if it wasn't the 2 weeks, then he probably would be like, well, we got to do a daring rescue mission in Klingon space. But because in 2 weeks we can do it, he's not
inclined.
Yeah,
it's like he's just like, okay, just wait. Yeah.
All right.
I would also like to point out, when La'an goes to meet with everyone from the Enterprise, they're not in their uniform. They're just in these totally hot other outfits.
Yeah,
everyone is looking so good.
I love it. I Strange New Worlds nails apparel, with the exception, for me personally, of Nurse Chapel. I don't like it. I don't like her look. I like her look, her face, her hair. I hate her uniform so much.
The white one?
Yeah, it's just, it, I don't know. I think the problem is that doctor from Discovery. Hot doctor.
Oh.
Shit.
No.
Can't think of his name. But the doctor on Discovery,
Henry Cavill. I know it's not Henry Cavill.
It's not Henry Cavill. That's definitely not it.
Cavill? Coddle? Something? With a C?
Doctor... Anyway. Mm-hmm. He rocks his uniform. Him in that uniform, he's one of the most beautiful people in the world. And yeah. Her in her uniform, I feel like her uniform does not add to her beauty. I feel like her uniform looks like a little bit uncomfy on her.
Wow.
And I think it is the contrast between her and him that bothers me a little bit. Anyway, Colbert. There's a group of people, Colbert.
Hugh there's a group of Colbert. People
on the planet who want the war to happen again because they make money when the war happens.
Yes.
And that's what Lon, she's like, I know this is happening. I don't know how they're going to try and reignite the war, but somehow they're going to try and reignite the war. And then she fails to do anything helpful for the rest of the episode because just Chapel and Emma Benga figure it all out, right?
No. So Lon like goes and talks to other people and she like, I guess, keeps other people distracted and stuff. But yeah, I guess Lon doesn't have too much direct involvement in solving the rest of this plot.
The solve is that Mbenga and Nurse Chapel go to the med tent and are doing doctor stuff and get abducted by this group who isn't, I don't think, ever called the Circle, but presumably since the episode's called The Broken Circle, that's who they are. I don't know. Anyway, they get abducted by them and they're like, you gotta help heal us because we are hanging out in a cave with a Federation starship and everybody's getting sick.
I think La'an doesn't know that the Circle wants to restart the war at the start, and so she has to sell the phasers to the Klingon to find out that they want to restart the war.
Gotcha.
I think that's what's
okay.
Happening.
Okay, that makes sense. The people on the ship are all sick with a disease that I guess like they've got burns just the right way. That means that there's photon torpedoes on the ship, which really makes me worried about the stability of photon torpedoes if, like... Just being on a ship with photon torpedoes means you're getting radiation burns all the time?
Well,
something weird is happening there.
Remember that this ship is like put together from spare parts by mm-hmm. people that are not experts at necessarily how to do this. And even if they were, they wouldn't have the best tools and materials available. So
that's true.
I could imagine there's like cracked casings or something.
Okay. That makes sense. I'll buy it. In any case, Mbenga and Chapel are like, well, they've got a ship, they've got photon torpedoes, and they're in disputed territory. They're going to do a false flag operation. We got to stop it.
Yeah.
And they've been conversing the whole time they've been on this planet about, like, doesn't this remind you of the war? Doesn't this remind you of the war? And I guess they're just talking about the Klingon War.
Right.
And Mbenga and Chapel apparently were serving together when the war was still on. And it sounds like they saw some shit. Like, I don't remember that being a thing that was really talked about in season one, that they both were like heavily traumatized from the war. But
I think Mbenga and Chapel are new to the Enterprise. The majority of the Enterprise was out on a deep space 5-year mission during the war.
That's right.
And it seems like Mbenga and Chapo and certain other select people were not. They were actually in Federation territory during the war.
Okay.
Mbenga pulls out some sort of green super combat drug, right?
Right.
And he pulls it out of his pocket. And Chapo looks over and immediately knows what it is without having to ask.
Yeah, because he says we can get to the communication center with this if it's that important.
And then she just says, do you ever not carry it? And he says, no, because that's where he's at now after having gone through enough combats over and over that he's just always he seems relaxed sometimes, but he's always ready to go right back in.
He's always got this. He's always got a loaded gun in his pocket. At this point in the episode, when they pull that out and he says that and then she says, you know, do you ever not carry it? I was like, did Mbenga invent some like biological weapon to kill Klingons and never got a chance to use it, but he's always ready to just be like, I'm gonna genocide some Klingons. But then no, they injected it in themselves, and it's Steve Rogers' blood. Like, they just become super soldiers for like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And just wipe out like everybody and fight their way through the ship to like the transponder for the ship, which he embeds a code in, which again, I'm like, who are you, Mbanga? Like, you have super soldier drugs. You know how to embed codes and carrier signals. What do you think about super soldier drug?
I love it. Whole thing. I think it's really good because it sort of reifies the idea that there's like the TV tropes calls it the conservation of ninjutsu, that like there's so much awesomeness and that there's a problem with awesomeness distribution. And in this mm-hmm. case, like if they were constantly crazy superpowered all the time, that would be a problem. And if they, even if like they could kill every Klingon they meet for the entire rest of the episode, that would even be a problem. So instead we're saying, no, it's like 5 minutes and then like it'll start wearing off and they'll have to hide. And that's how okay. they hide, end up in the airlock and stuff. So it's actually really convenient from a storytelling perspective.
Yeah, right. I do like the limitations they put on it there. I do feel like we're obviously going to hear more about whatever this drug is sometime this season. But
again,
at this point,
I don't know. I don't think so.
Oh, we have to. We better. I will be so mad if we don't, because this would be like if they did a prequel to Star Trek and gave us a ship that could jump anywhere in the galaxy anytime it wanted at infinite speeds and not explain why that's not in Star Trek for the rest of Star Trek.
Star Trek would never do that, Troy. Star Trek would never do that to you. Ultimately, I think that the idea that there are combat drugs is actually practically nothing. And as my brother, who is not here, but he pointed out a few days ago, is that it has been implied before that during World War III, that there was a bunch of combat drugs used by the soldiers. Ooh. And so this is basically like early enough in time and they're still using combat drugs. But these are like unstable things that don't really last well. You can't rely upon them. So as Starfleet transitions to more reliable methods, they phase out the combat drugs and they just give people good phasers and stuff.
Sorry, that got me. I like that explanation. And the reason I feel like we're going to see this again is because we didn't get that explanation in this episode. But I feel like I need two explanations on this. One is where this came from. And if the explanation on that is just Mbanga came up with a formula, I'm like, cool. Okay. Like, I don't need a long background. I like your version better, where it's like he discovered some, you know, World War III formula and started using it again or something. I like that better. And then the other thing I need is why not use it all the time? And there's a line where when it starts to wear off, she says something about like, unless you've got enough drinks for another dance. So it sounds like she's like, if you got a hit, I'll take another hit right now. And there needs to be some reason you can't take it all the time.
I think the reason you can't take it all the time is earlier when he pulls it out, he like pulls it out and says, this could get us there if we need to. Mm-hmm. And to me, that means that it's like, it's bad just to take it because it like could be addictive or something if you take it too often.
Yep.
Within a short period of time, something like that.
And I mean, really, if they connected it back, sure. If they connected it back to the World War III soldiers with just like a vape pen hooked up to their chest, that would answer both those questions for me at the same time.
I don't know that they have to explicitly explain everything, because that gets really close to the having to say exactly that Spock learned the liar because Mbanga gave it to him thing, and it's like, we can let the audience connect the dots on their own a little more often.
That super drug is too good, though. It worked too
It's not
be
too
like,
good. It worked for like it worked for like 5 minutes or whatever.
How many times would Picard not have been captured if he had had a super drug that would have let him punch Klingons in the face? Come on. He could have punched out the Borg. He could have punched the queen right in the nose.
I don't see. The thing is, like, what people can actually do isn't determined by, like, some sort of hard realities of what tools are available. And it really is determined by the plots and stuff.
Sure.
It's just,
but then
it's,
but you've now put super drugs in the plot. If this was Discovery, where they're in the future,
Troy,
wouldn't bother me.
There's
but it's
Genesis,
in the past.
There's Genesis weapons that can remake the entire planet with one torpedo, and yet they still have wars with the Cardassians because they don't just deploy Genesis torpedoes all the time or whatever. It's like,
they explain that the Genesis torpedo is unstable, though. They give us the reason that it doesn't work.
Yeah, but like, if you were in a deadly war, I feel like maybe you'd try an unstable weapon.
They just shoot the torpedo at the Founder's homeworld, and the lake starts growing algae all over it. The ship takes off. It's gonna go try and blow up a Klingon.
Well, they get locked in an airlock. They seal them
right
in the airlock room.
To hide away. But then the ship takes off.
Yeah.
And then they realize that the Enterprise, well, they sent out a signal saying, blow this ship up, because they were like, it's gonna be a false flag operation. Let's get rid of the ship. So Mbenga and Chapel have decided they'll die for the cause. Except that their airlock has in it a jetpack and a helmet with
it's
a
got,
receiver
yeah,
in it.
Parts of a single spacesuit.
Yeah.
It's got the jetpack and helmet from one spacesuit, but not two spacesuits and not the rest of the outfit.
Yeah. Spock holds off firing as long as he can until the fake ship's going to blow up the Klingon ship.
So hold on, because
I didn't rewatch this part. I rewatched the first half of the episode and I got to the super drug fight and then I stopped watching.
So once they're in the airlock, the ship takes off. That's where La'an basically steps out of the thing. She watches the ship take off and just is totally stunned at the sort of the majesty of an entire ship taking off from underground, which is very good. But also, anyone who cares to go to about 36 minutes and about 5 seconds, you can get a nice shot of some lovely, lovely nacelles. I don't think that this would be too young for this trek if we didn't talk about the amazing nacelles on display. We get a lovely zoom out shot where we see some Klingon nacelles and then zoom out past a big ruby dilithium asteroid field or whatever. And then we see the Enterprise nacelles all in one shot. It's just delightful.
All right, we covered Spock's boner and nacelles. We're good.
We're very good.
I did forget about that shot of the ship flying out of the ground. It was pretty cool because it literally like cracks out through the ground.
Yeah, we see the Klingon ship shows up. The false flagship takes off up out of the ground. La'an is totally stunned. And that's when Spock also puts it together of what's going on.
And they receive the signal saying blow up the ship. They wait as long as they can, and finally Spock says to fire, even though they haven't heard from Mbenga and Chapel, so he thinks he's killed them for just a moment, and then they pick up the helmet signal because they jumped out the airlock with no spacesuit.
They jumped out the airlock.
Whew.
They did. I would like to point out that Ortegas also gets to do some very amazing flying.
Yes, she
does.
And to
dodge a whole bunch of laser blasts and stuff with, this is not how Star Trek ships have ever fought in old Trek, and so it's pretty good.
Listen, it's Star Trek. We can do timey-wimey bullshit. I want an episode where the pilot from Discovery and Ortegas have to fly a ship together, and I will be very, very happy because I like those. They're both great. Both good pilots.
Detmer,
thank you.
I don't know about... I got a lot of things about Discovery. I'm not going to go into Discovery.
I like almost all of the characters on Discovery.
Most of them are characters.
A lot more than
characters.
I like Discovery.
I don't like a lot of the characters. They're like, they're in the room, but you don't really know who they are. You don't know anything about them.
This is a problem with that show. Very much so.
So it's like, what is there to like about Detmer? She's got a cool haircut. I don't know anything else about her. Literally nothing else about her.
Did you not hear me talk about Pike's hair at the start of this episode? That'll do it for me.
I mean, everyone's got a haircut, Troy. I don't think that's enough.
The Klingons are like, what the hell, Federation ship? Why'd you blow up a Federation ship? And Spock's like, hey, let me explain it to you. I think the Klingon says, I don't trust people unless I can look them in the eyes face to face. So then Spock has to go and drink with the Klingon to prove that he's cool or whatever. I just love that Spock's very good at this episode. So he drinks with the Klingon and he like yells their war cries and stuff, but all while like being very rigid and Spock-like.
Well, we kind of skipped over another bit. So after the ship is being shot at, finally, the false flagship, Mbenga and Chapel jump off the ship just in time. And then they all get like frozen in space for like 20 seconds or something. And the Enterprise plucks them up. And then Spock has to run the transporter room and like dramatically like CPR Chapel and stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's very, very emotional. His heart monitor, it would be like just maxed out. and then Spock goes back to the bridge and is like, oh, okay, I guess we'll talk to the Klingons. We'll have a drinking match and so forth.
Then he's got a hangover, and April decides not to punish him because he has a hangover from Bloodline. And he says that that's punishment enough. And then we find out that the Federation admirals are all very concerned about the Gorn, which they hinted earlier that something was wrong at Federation HQ. And what's wrong is that they're worried about the Gorn, which didn't strike me as a big reveal because, like, I feel like that was what we were building up all last season. So the fact that they're like, oh man, the Gorn might be coming was like, yeah, I didn't get that as a big exciting reveal.
I mean, it doesn't have to be a big reveal. It can just be a reveal. It can just be like a foreshadow.
Yeah, but they foreshadowed the foreshadow. And then because earlier in the episode, they're like, something's off at Starfleet HQ. I don't know what it is, but everybody seems like they're on edge. And so it's like, ooh, what's it going to be?
Oh, I mean, like, I would consider all of that combined to be one foreshadow.
I guess I wanted like the reveal to be that the Gorn have like wiped out a planet and they have kept it secret or something, like something more concrete of a threat than, hey, the Gorn are out there, because they were out there already, right? Weren't they out there last season?
So we get to see a specific indicator of a little specific thing flying across a border.
Oh, okay. I missed that it crossed a border, I guess.
Yeah, there's a little red triangle, and it's near some lines on a map. So presumably it's some sort of possibly invading fleet or single ship or something.
Okay. I'm okay with the Gorn being the big bad of Strange New Worlds. It may not make sense with original canon, but the way they showed them last season sure was real scary. So I'm kind of okay with that. If I think that La'an's backstory with them is too much, but that's okay.
It's a hair much.
Yeah. She has two backstories. That's my problem with it.
That she hates augments and also she fights the Gorn?
Well, she doesn't hate. I mean, she probably does hate augments, but she's the fact that she's related to Khan and also hates the Gorn is like, whoa, okay, you've got a lot going on as a character.
Well, yeah. And on the other hand, like, Una has not much going on.
Right, that's for her. They could have taken one of those backstories and given it to another character.
Yeah, and it's hard to balance when you only get 10 episodes to a season. Like, even when this entire season finishes, it will still be less episodes than TNG season 1.
That's true.
Yeah, because it's like 10 and 10. It's in season 1 of... Like almost all the TNG seasons were 24, I think.
26, if not all. Something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the Broken Circle. I mostly liked it. I just
Troy, there's one more detail.
Oh my goodness. What do I keep missing?
At the end of the episode, there's a dedication.
Oh, there is a dedication.
Do you want to read the dedication, Troy?
I don't have it in front of me, but it was for Michelle.
For Nichelle, who was the first through the door and showed us the stars, hailing frequencies forever open.
I gotta see if there's somebody actually at the door.
Okay. Hi, listeners. Just Locathor here for a second. I gotta say, I don't really care for most of Discovery, but I think that they actually do a lot of the individual character moments right. It's just they don't know how to string those character moments together into an episode because the entire universe always has to be under threat of, like, complete existence failure. And that's ridiculous. I don't know why it always has to be that big. And Picard has the same problem. At the end of Picard season 2, we speed run an entire episode of Discovery because we have to go and fight the mega threat. Even after we've resolved all the main tensions, we have to go back to the present and then create an entire other Borg thing that exists and then immediately forget about it forever. Hi, Troy.
What are we talking about?
I was talking
Discovery
about how...
Discovery Season 2, Picard Season 1, Picard Season 2, or Picard Season 3?
It's funny that you have that list of all the things that I could have been talking about, because my complaint was how so many of the seasons of New Trek rely upon there being a giant mega threat mm-hmm. that's like going to end all existence, and it has to be the most dramatic thing ever, and it's the biggest Marvel movie you've ever seen. And I'm like, no. Like, what could be a threat? Could be like Captain Picard has been attacked by an alien probe and he's having a dream. That could be an episode.
That could be an episode.
Maybe it would be an award-winning episode if Captain Picard was hailed by one probe and then had a dream most of the time. You know? maybe you should do a small story.
Star Trek is best, in my opinion, when it's doing small stories. Which is why Strange New World speaks to me so much more than most of other New Trek. I don't hate New Trek. I'm not one of those people. But I like a small story. Which is what scares me about
the
script.
I want is for them to get rid of all the writers and get other writers, but don't change any actors at all. I love the actors and their characters.
Keep all the writers, get rid of the showrunners, because I think the writers are really good at writing those characters.
Okay. Well, just, I don't know about that.
Forbid them from writing season-long arcs. That's what I need. Because they're not good at it.
They're very not good at it. It's ridiculous.
Like, Breaking Bad can have a season-long story. Star Trek, it seems, cannot. Because every time they have had a season-long story, the season-long story has been disappointing to me.
Well, I mean, it's impossible to do. You can't say that there have been 7 lights in the sky simultaneously, and also, like, because of how light works, you wouldn't see them if they went off simultaneously. You wouldn't see them simultaneously, you know. That's not how light works. But anyway, you can't say that there's that and then like have all this build up to it, and then there's literally nothing you can do. There's no one you can say is in the angel suit that's going to make it sound cool that there was an angel that went through time a whole bunch or whatever.
Yeah, that's that is a big part of it, is that they don't just try and do season-long plots, they try to do season-long mysteries, and that's too long for a mystery. Too long. Just do, if you know, you did, you started New Trek with a war, and the best ongoing plot in Star Trek was the Dominion War. You have a format for how to tell an ongoing war story.
No, they don't.
Episodic stories within it.
They don't have that format because they refuse to talk about or interact with Deep Space Nine.
That's true.
They only want to talk about the original series and TNG. We don't talk about DS9 and Voyager, Enterprise, any of that.
Oh, Seven's here. So we've got Seven.
Okay, she's Seven's here, and we're gonna put the Voyager on screen, and that's about it. We're not really gonna talk too much about it.
Yeah. I like this episode except for the super soldier thing. That was my big gripe with it, because I feel like it was unexplained, and it being unexplained makes me think that it's going to be explained more in the future. And I worry that that's going to turn into Strange New Worlds trying to do a season long plot. And I don't want them to do that. That's my concern.
No, I like it because of the super soldier thing, because I like it when it is sort of, it's just hinted at that there's a big wider world out here, that there's a lot going on, and that all these people have backstories, and we're never going to learn all the backstories, because you can't even learn one entire person's life, much less 7 or 10 of them. So I like it when it's just like, yeah, they did a thing.
Yeah.
Go write your fan fiction. Go nuts. What was Mavenga up to? I don't know. Check out AO3.
Again, because I want to agree with you so hard, but then my immediate response is, if she had said, unless you got more for one more dance, and he said, no, that was my last one, I would have been like, cool, good. I don't need any more explanation. Like that.
Well, I mean, he didn't pull out another one. It was life or death, and he didn't pull out a second one. So we can assume that he didn't have a second one. It's not like he had a second one and didn't use it.
I just need closure.
We don't need explicit verbal closure.
Have super drugs all the time.
Because, look, you can have a gun and it can kill people, but the gun will run out of bullets. And if you stop shooting the gun, then it's out of bullets. Like, you know, I mean, like, if you have a tool that will get you out of the life-threatening situation and you don't use it, it's because you can't. You can't use it for some reason. And if it's a quantity thing, well, the quantity is zero now. You don't have to ask too hard a question about that.
I'm just trying to think of, like, who in future Star Trek would be most likely to be, like, a juicer. Like, I don't think that Worf would, because Worf's too pure of a Klingon. But Duras, come on, you're going to tell me that Duras wouldn't be shooting this stuff up on a daily basis?
Maybe that's why. I mean, I'm sure. Look, it's not like combat drugs exist in the real, like, you, there are places in the real world where they get people high on stuff to make them go into battle. It's not like this is an unknown new thing. It's just, it's not actually effective that much most of the time. So most of the time,
but they
people
didn't
don't
show
it.
That they showed it being really effective.
Well, yeah, I'm sure it works some of the time.
They got really high and punched people really, really hard, and there's
no
downside.
It was so cool. It was so cool. It was like Metal Gear Solid. That's what it was like.
Mbenga turned into Snake for just for 5 minutes, and
just
then
for
it stopped.
5 minutes. We had one anime episode where he does a mega drug, and then that's it.
Hey, thanks for hanging out with me and talking about Strange New Worlds.
Yeah, are we gonna do this next week?
Maybe. I'm out of town this weekend, but we could like try and do it Tuesday, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah,
is it Tuesday today? It is Tuesday.
Tuesdays, yeah.
Hey, Tuesdays.
I'm generally free on Mondays and Tuesdays.
Well,
so.
The good news is my kiddo is in daycare on Tuesdays, so we can probably do this on Tuesdays.
Okay.
Where can people find you if they wanted to find you?
I'm Lokathor, LOKATHOR on Twitter and also Discord.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's one of the two, you know.
Yeah. Come hang out in our Discord where we talk about Star Trek.
Also, I guess.
You do a podcast?
I do a podcast. It's one of those AOLP podcasts, like what Troy does with the video games. Troy, oh no, Troy went with the dog again. I was going to ask Troy if we have to like edit this episode or anything, but given these moments of silence, maybe it is for Troy. Oh, editing's for Troy. Oh, Troy editing's has wireless headphones, so he could hear me the whole time. He just
I couldn't before
because
I had to take them off. In okay. case there was somebody at the door. This time I knew that there's no one at the door. I just left the door open earlier, and now the dogs are barking because there's neighbor kids outside.
Okay.
One of the dogs was barking at neighbor kids. The other is eating rocks.
Okay. So we don't have to edit our tracks or anything?
Nah.
Should we say, this is Zencastr, ZENCASTR.com. They're providing this lovely VoIP and record thing for us, and so... You know, if you have to do that. I've done this before, but like on Discord and stuff.
Yeah.
And it's fine.
Well, here's the thing. You haven't tried to record a podcast with Eric and his terrible internet. And yeah. So once we find a system that works, we just don't touch it anymore because Eric's internet's so bad.
Eric's internet is very bad. I see. That would affect it quite a bit.
Yeah. Hey, thanks for listening to Too Young for This Track. It's on Twitter and places. And I'm Turtle Power, and that's Lokathor. And I don't know where we're beaming to. I was going
to
make a joke about how
we're beaming to Strange New Worlds
were...
episode 2 when it comes out.
Yeah. I was going to make a joke about how we were like pirates in Star Trek because it's like a pirate radio on Too Young for This Trek.
Right.
Are the Orions aren't typical? Is there like a pirate race? There's not really a pirate race, right? The Orions would be the closest.
Well, I think you're thinking of the Serene Squall, I think it's called, from earlier.
Oh, gosh.
Last season when they capture the pirate ship.
She's so good. I hope she comes back.
Oh, I'm sure she'll have to come
back. She's got to be back this season, right?
Well, you can't introduce that like it's going to be Cybok and then never...
Oh, I forgot about that. That's thrilling. All right. Well, two to beam out. Good. We both did old school beams. None of this bloop crap from Discovery. Stop button.
Oh yeah, they're badge teleporters.
Yep. Boop. That's the teleport sound in Discovery. Just boop.